Sebastian, Jensen asked, do you think we could escape Dahara? Maybe go to your homeland? Escape the reach of this monster? Sebastian shrugged. Maybe, but until this madman is killed, will there be anywhere beyond his ravenous reach? Her mother tucked the exquisite knife behind her belt and then folded her fingers together around one bent knee. Thank you, Sebastian. You've helped us. Being in hiding has, regrettably, kept us in the dark. You've at least brought us a bit of light. Sorry it wasn't better news. The truth is the truth. It helps us know what to do. Her mother smiled at her. Jensen always was one who sought to know the truth of things. I've never kept it from her. Truth is the only means of survival. It's as simple as that. If you don't want to try to kill him in order to eliminate the threat, maybe you can think of some way to make the new Lord Rawl lose interest in you, in Jensen. Jensen's mother shook her head. There are more things involved than we can tell you tonight. Things you are in the dark about. Because of them, he will never rest, never stop. You don't understand the lengths to which the Lord Rawl, any Lord Rawl, will go in order to kill Jensen. If that's so, then perhaps you're right. Maybe the two of you should run. And would you help us, help her, to get away from Dahara? He looked from one of them to the other. If I can, I guess I could try. But I'm telling you, there is no place to hide. If you ever want to be free, you'll have to kill him. I'm no assassin, Jensen said, not so much out of protest as out of acceptance of her own frailty in the face of such brutal strength. I want to live, but I just don't have the nature to be an assassin. I will defend myself, but I don't think I could effectively set out to kill anyone. The sad fact is, I just wouldn't be any good at it. He's a killer by birth, I'm not. Sebastian met her gaze with an icy look. His white hair cast red by the firelight framed cold blue eyes. You'd be surprised what a person can do if they have the proper motivation. Her mother lifted a hand to halt such talk. She was a practical woman, not given to wasting valuable time on wild schemes. Right now, the important thing is for us to get away. Lord Rawl's minions are too close. That's the simple truth of it. From the description and this knife, the dead man you found today was probably part of a quad. Sebastian looked up with a frown. A what? A team of four assassins. On occasion, several quads will work together, if the target has proven particularly elusive, or is of inestimable worth. Jensen is both. Sebastian rested an arm over his knee. For someone on the run and in hiding all these years, you seem to know a lot about these quads. Are you sure you're right? Firelight danced in her mother's eyes. Her voice turned more distant. When I was young, I used to live at the People's Palace. I used to see those men, the quads. Dark and Rawl used them to hunt people. They are ruthless beyond anything you could imagine. Sebastian looked uneasy. Well, I guess you would know better than I. In the morning, then, we leave. He yawned as he stretched. Your herbs are already working, and this fever has exhausted me. After a good night's sleep, I'll help you both get away from here, away from Dahara, and on your way to the old world, if that's your wish. It is. Her mother stood. You two eat the rest of the fish. As she moved past, her loving fingers trailed along the back of Jensen's head. I'm going to go collect some of our things, get together what we can carry. I'll be right in, Jensen said, soon as I bank the fire. Chapter 6 The rain was getting worse. Runoff ran in a rippled sheet over the ledge at the brow of the cave. Jensen scratched Betty behind her ears to try to stop her bleeding. The always nervous goat was suddenly inconsolable. Perhaps she sensed that they were going to be leaving. Maybe she was just unhappy that Jensen's mother had gone into the house. Betty loved that woman, and would often follow her around the yard like a puppy. Betty would be only too happy to sleep in the house with them both, if they would let her. Sebastian, having had his fill of fish, rolled himself in his cloak. His eyelids drooped as he tried to watch her bank the fire. He lifted his head and frowned over at the pacing goat. "Betty will settle down when I go in the house," Jensen told him. Sebastian, already half asleep, mumbled something about Betty that Jensen couldn't even begin to hear over the noise of the rain. She knew it wasn't important enough to ask him to repeat it. He needed sleep. She yawned. Despite her anxiety over everything that had happened that day and her worry about what the next would bring, the din of the downpour was making her sleepy too. As much as she ached to ask him about what was beyond Dahara, she bid him a good night's sleep, even though she doubted that he heard her over the rain. She would have time enough to ask him all her questions. Her mother would be waiting for help with selecting what to take and packing it. They didn't have much, but they would have to leave some of what they had. At least the clumsy dead Daharan soldier had provided them with money just when they would need it most. It was enough money to buy horses and supplies that would help them get out of Dahara. The new Lord Rahl, the bastard son of a bastard son in an unbroken long line of bastard sons, had inadvertently provided them with the means to escape his grasp. Life was so precious. She just wanted her and her mother to be able to live their own lives. Somewhere over the distant, dark horizon lay their new lives. Jensen threw her cloak around her shoulders. She pulled the hood up to protect herself from the rain, but as hard as it was coming down, she expected she was likely to get wet on the run to the house. She hoped the morning would dawn clear for their first day of travel, so they could put distance between them and their pursuers. She was pleased to see that Sebastian looked dead to the world. He needed a good sleep. She was thankful that, amid all the torment and injustice, at least he had come into their lives. Jensen picked up the bowl with the few remaining pieces of fish, tucked it under her cloak, held her breath, and, lowering her head against the onslaught, dove into the roaring rain. The cold shock of the downpour made her gasp as she splashed through the dark puddles on her dash to the house. She made the house, her wet lashes turning the dim light of the oil lamps and firelight coming through the window to a blinking blur. Without looking up, she threw the door open as she ran in. "It's cold as the keeper's heart," she called out to her mother as she raced in. Jensen's breath left her lungs in a grunt as she crashed into a solid wall that had never been there before. Rebounding from the collision, she looked up to see a broad back turning to see a huge hand snatching for her. The hand caught only her cloak, the heavy wool cloak stripped away from her as she fell back. The bowl thudded to the floor, spinning like a crazy top. The door bounced back from hitting the wall, banging closed behind her, trapping her just before her back slammed into it. Gasping, Jensen reacted. It was wild instinct, not deliberate thought. "Jensen." Terror, not technique. "Surrender." Desperation, not design. The man's blocky face was clearly lit by the fire from the hearth. He plunged toward her, a monster with stringy wet hair. Straining sinew and muscle twisted in rage. The knife in her fist whipped around, powered by stark terror. Her cry was a growl of panicked effort. Her knife slammed into the side of his head. The blade snapped at mid-length as it hit his cheekbone. His head twisted from the impact. Blood splashed across his face. Swinging madly, his meaty hand walloped her face. Her shoulder hit the wall. A shock of pain lanced her arm. She stumbled on something. Thrown off balance, she tumbled past her footing. Her face smacked the floor beside another of the huge men. He was like the dead soldier she had buried. Her mind grasped at snatches of what she was seeing, trying to make sense of it. Where did they come from? How were they in her house? Her leg was draped over the man's still legs. She pushed herself up. He was slumped against the wall. His dead eyes stared at her. The handle with the ornate R sideways below his ear reflected sparkles of firelight. The point of the knife jutted from the other side of his bull neck. He wore a wet red shirt. Surrender. With cold fright, she saw a man coming for her. Gripping her broken knife, she scrambled to her feet, turning toward the threat. She saw her mother on the floor. A man held her by the hair. There was blood everywhere. Nothing seemed real. In a nightmare vision, Jensen saw her mother's severed arm on the floor, fingers slack and open, red stab wounds. Jensen. Panic ruled her mind. She heard her own short, choppy screams. Wet blood splashed across the floor, glistened in the firelight. Whirling movement. A man slammed into her, driving her to the wall. She lost her breath. Pain crushed her chest. Surrender. No! Her own voice seemed unreal. She slashed with her broken knife, ripping the man's arm. He bellowed a vile oath. The man holding Jensen's mother dropped her and made for Jensen. She stabbed wildly, frantically at the men around her. Reaching hands shot toward her from all around. A huge hand clamped her thrashing knife arm. Surrender. Jensen gasped a cry. She struggled savagely. She kicked. She bit. Men cursed. The second man seized her throat in iron fingers. No breath. No breath. She tried. Couldn't breathe. Tried desperately. She couldn't draw a breath. He sneered as he squeezed her throat. Pain shot up through her temples. His cheek, slashed by her knife, laid open from ear to mouth, ran with gouts of blood. She could see glistening red teeth through the gaping wound. Jensen struggled, but couldn't pull a breath. A fist slammed her stomach. She kicked him. He seized her ankle before she could kick him again. One was dead. Two had her. Her mother down. Her vision was narrowing to a black tunnel. Her chest burned. It hurt so much. So much. Sound was muffled. She heard a bone-jarring thunk. The man in front of her, squeezing her throat, staggered once as his head jerked. It made no sense to her. His grip went slack. She gasped an urgent breath. His head tipped forward. A crescent-bladed axe was embedded in the back of the man's neck, severing his spine. The axe handle swung in an arc as he dropped. Sebastian, measured fury with white hair, stood behind him. The last man let go of her arm. His other fist brought up a blood-slick sword. Sebastian was quicker than the man. Jensen was even quicker than Sebastian. Surrender. She cried out, an animal sound, savage, unbridled terror and fury. Her broken blade slashed across the side of the man's neck. Her half-blade ripped bone deep, cut the artery, severed muscles. He cried out. Blood seemed to float, suspended in midair, as the man pitched against the far wall on his way down. She'd swung so hard she fell, sprawling with him. Sebastian's short sword struck like lightning, slamming through the great barrel chest with bone-cracking power. Jensen scrambled over the body, slipping on blood. She saw only her mother on the floor, half-sitting, leaning against the far wall. Her mother watched her come. Jensen couldn't stop screaming, couldn't breathe through her hysterical cries. Her mother, covered in blood, eyelids half-closed, looked as if she were falling asleep. But she had that spark of joy at seeing Jensen, always that spark in her eyes. Her face had bloody streaks from big fingers down the side. She smiled her beautiful smile at seeing Jensen. Baby, she whispered. Jensen couldn't make herself stop screaming, shaking. She didn't look down at the awful red wounds. She saw only her mother's face. Mama, mama, mama. One arm embraced her. The other was gone. Her knife arm, gone. The one around Jensen was love and comfort and shelter. Her mother smiled a weary smile. Baby, you did good. Now, listen to me. Sebastian was there, working frantically to tie something around what was left of her mother's right arm, trying to stem the tide of blood. Her mother only saw Jensen.
"I'm here, Mama. Everything will be fine. I'm here. Mama, don't die. Don't die. Hold on, Mama. Hold on."
"Listen." Her voice was hardly more than a breath.
"I'm listening, Mama," Jensen cried. "I'm listening."
"I'm gone. I'm crossing to be with the good spirits now."
"No, Mama, no. Please, no."
"Can't help it, baby. It's all right. The good spirits will take good care of me." Jensen held her mother's face in both hands, trying to see it through the helpless flood of tears. Jensen gasped with frantic sobs.
"Mama, don't leave me alone. Don't leave me. Please, oh, please don't. Oh, Mama, I love you."
"Love you, baby, more than anything. I've taught you all I can. Listen now." Jensen nodded, fearing to miss a single precious word.
"The good spirits are taking me. You must understand that. When I go, this body won't be me any longer. Understand? I don't need it anymore. It doesn't hurt at all, not at all. Isn't that a wonder? I'm with the good spirits. You must be strong now and leave what is no longer me."
"Mama?"
Jensen could only sob in agony as she held the face she loved more than life itself.
"He's coming for you, Jen. Run. Don't stay with this body that isn't me after I'm with the good spirits, understand?"
"No, Mama. I can't leave you. I can't."
"You must. Don't foolishly risk your life just to bury this useless body. It isn't me. I'm in your heart and with the good spirits. This body isn't me. Understand, baby?"
"Yes, Mama, not you. You'll be with the good spirits, not here."
Her mother nodded in Jensen's hands.
"Good girl. Take the knife. I took one out with it. It's a worthy weapon."
"Mama, I love you."
Jensen wished for better words, but there were none.
"I love you."
"I love you. That's why you must run, baby. I don't want you to throw your life away over what is no longer me. Your life is too precious. Leave this empty vessel. Run, Jen, or he'll get you. Run."
Her eyes turned toward Sebastian.
"Help her?"
Sebastian right there nodded. "I swear I will." She looked back at Jensen and smiled her sweet love.
"I'll always be in your heart, baby. Always. Love you, always."
"Oh, Mama, you know I love you. Always."
Her mother smiled as she watched her daughter. Jensen's fingers caressed her mother's beautiful face. For a fleeting eternity, her mother watched her. Until Jensen realized that her mother was no longer seeing anything in this world. Jensen fell against her mother, dissolving in tears and terror. Choking in sobs, everything had ended. The crazy, senseless world had ended. Her arms stretched out toward her mother as she was pulled away. "Jensen," his mouth was close to her ear, "we have to do what she wanted."
"No. Please, oh, please, no," she wailed.
He gently pulled. "Jensen, do as she asked. We must." Jensen pounded her fist against the blood-slicked floor.
"No."
The world had ended.
"Oh, please, no. No, it can't be."
"Jen, we have to go."
"You go,"
she sobbed.
"I don't care. I give up."
"No, Jen, you don't. You can't." His arm around her middle lifted her, set her on her wobbly legs. Numb, Jensen couldn't move. Nothing was real. Everything was a dream. The world was crumbling to ash. Holding her by her upper arms, he shook her. "Jensen, we have to get out of here." She turned her head and looked at her mother on the floor.
"We have to do something," Please, we have to do something.
Yes, we do. We have to leave before more men show up. His face was dripping. She wondered if it was rain. As if she were watching herself from some great disconnected distance, her own thoughts seemed crazy to her. Jensen, listen to me. Her mother had said that. It was important. Listen to me. We have to get out of here. Your mother was right. We have to go. He turned to the pack beside the lamp on the table at the side of the room. Jensen slumped to the floor. Her knees hit with a thump. She was empty of everything but the hot coals of agony from which she could not pull away. Why did everything have to be so wrong? Jensen crawled toward her sleeping mother. She couldn't die. She couldn't. Jensen loved her too much for her to die. Jensen, grieve later. We have to get out of here. Out the open door, the rain poured down.
I won't leave her.
Your mother made a sacrifice for you, so you would have a life. Don't throw away her final act of courage. He was stuffing whatever he could find in a pack. You have to do as she said. She loves you and wants you to live. She told you to run. I swore I'd help you. We have to leave before they catch us here. She stared at the door. It had been closed. She remembered crashing into it. Now it stood open. Maybe the latch broke. A huge shadow materialized out of the rain, melting through the doorway into the house. The brawny man's eyes fixed on her. Feral fright surged through her. He moved toward her, faster and faster. Jensen saw the knife with the ornate R sticking from the side of a dead man's neck. The knife her mother told her to take. It wasn't far. Her mother had lost her arm, her life, to kill him. The man, seemingly oblivious of Sebastian, dove for Jensen. She dove for the knife. Her fingers, greasy with blood, seized the handle. The worked metal gave good grip. Art with purpose. Deadly art. With teeth gritted, she yanked the blade free and rolled. Before the man reached her, Sebastian growled with the effort of burying his axe in the back of the man's head. The soldier crashed to the floor beside her, his meaty arm falling across her middle. Jensen, crying out, wriggled out from under the arm as blood grew in a dark pool beneath his head. Sebastian pulled her up. Get whatever you want to take, he ordered. She moved through the room, walking in a dream. The world had gone mad. Perhaps it was she who had finally gone mad. The voice in her head whispered to her in its strange language. She found herself listening, almost comforted by it.
Tu wasch mischt, tu wasch mischt. Gustava, du kannst mischt.
We have to go, Sebastian said. Get what you want to take. She couldn't think. She didn't know what to do. She blocked the voice and told herself to do as her mother said to do. She went to the cupboard and rapidly began picking things out that they had always took when they traveled. Things always at the ready. Traveling clothes were kept in her pack, ready to leave at a moment's notice. She threw herbs, spices, and dried food in on top of them. She pulled other clothes, a brush, a small mirror, from a simple chest of woven branches. Her hand paused when she started grabbing her mother's clothes for her. She stopped, fingers trembling, focusing on her mother's orders. She couldn't think, so she moved like a trained animal, doing as she had been taught. They'd had to run before. She scanned the room, four dead Daharans, one that morning. That made five, a quad plus one. Where were the other three? In the dark, outside the door, in the trees, in the dark woods, waiting, waiting to take her to Lord Rawl to be tortured to death? With both hands, Sebastian seized her wrist. Jensen, what are you doing? She realized she was stabbing at the empty air. She watched as he pried the knife from her fist and returned it to its sheath. He tucked it behind her belt. He scooped up her cloak, which the huge Daharan soldier had ripped off her as she had first fallen into the nightmare. Hurry up, Jensen. Grab anything else you want. Sebastian rifled through the dead man's pockets. Pulling out money he found, cramming it in his own pockets, he unstrapped all four knives, none as good as the one he'd tucked behind her belt, the one with the ornate letter R on the handle, the one from the fallen dead man, the one her mother had used. Sebastian slipped the four knives down the side of the pack as he yelled at her again to hurry. While he took the best sword from one of the men, Jensen went to the table. She scooped up candles and stuffed them in the pack. Sebastian attached the scabbard of the sword to his weapon belt. Jensen collected small implements, cooking utensils, pots, pushing them in her pack. She wasn't really aware of what she was taking. She was just picking up whatever she saw and putting it in. Sebastian lifted her pack, took one of her wrists, and stuffed it through the strap, as if he were handling a rag doll. He put her other arm through the other strap he held out for her, then threw her cloak around her shoulders. After he pulled the hood up over her head, he stuffed her red hair in the sides. He held her mother's pack in one hand. He tugged twice and freed his axe from the soldier's skull. Blood ran down the handle as he hooked the axe on his weapons belt. With the heel of his sword hand against the small of her back, he urged her onward. "Anything else?" he asked as they moved toward the door. "Jensen, do you want anything else from your house before we go?" Jensen looked over her shoulder at her mother on the floor. "She's gone, Jensen. The good spirits are taking care of her now. She's smiling down on you now." Jensen looked up at him.
"Really? You think so?"
"Yes. She's in a better world now. She told us to go from here. We have to do what she said."
In a better world.
Jensen clung to that idea. Her world held only anguish. She moved toward the door, doing as Sebastian said to do. He scanned in every direction. She simply followed, stepping over bodies, over bloody arms and legs. She was too scared to feel anymore, too heartsick to care. Her thoughts seemed completely muddled. She had always prided herself on her clear thinking. Where had her clear thinking gone? In the rain, he pulled her by her arm toward the path down.
"Betty,"
she said, digging in her heels. "We have to get Betty." He gazed at the path, then toward the cave. "I don't think we need bother with the goat, but I should get my pack, my things." She saw he was standing in the downpour without his cloak. He was soaked to the skin. It occurred to her that she wasn't the only one who wasn't thinking clearly. He was so intent on escaping that he almost left his things. That would be the death of him. She couldn't let him die. Betty would help. But there was one other thing that she remembered. Jensen ran back in the house. She ignored Sebastian's yells. Inside, she wasted no time rushing to a small wooden chest just inside the door. She looked at nothing else as she pulled out two bundled sheepskin cloaks, one hers, one her mother's. They kept them there, rolled and tied, at the ready in case they ever had to leave in a hurry. He watched from the doorway, impatient but silent, when he saw what she was doing. Without looking death in the eye, she rushed back out of her house for the last time. Together they ran to the cave. The fire was still crackling hot. Betty paced and trembled, but was uncharacteristically silent, as if knowing something was terribly wrong. "Dry yourself a bit first," she said. "We don't have time. We have to get out of here. The others could come at any moment." "You'll freeze to death if you don't. Then what good will running do? Dead is dead." Her own reasoned words surprised her. Jensen pulled the two rolled sheepskin cloaks from under her wool cloak and started working loose the knots in the thongs. "These will help keep the rain out, but you need to get dry first, otherwise you won't stay warm enough." He was nodding as he shivered and rubbed his hands before the fire, the sense of what she said finally overcoming his urgency to be gone. She wondered how he managed to do all he had done with the fever and after having taken herbs. Fear, she guessed. Stark, raving fear. That she understood. Her whole body ached. Not only had she been banged around, but she saw now that her shoulder was bleeding. The cut wasn't bad, but it throbbed. The sustained level of terror had left her drained and exhausted. She wanted only to lie down and cry, but her mother had told her to get away. Only her mother's words motivated her now. Without those last commands, Jensen would be unable to function. Now she simply did what her mother had told her to do. Betty was beside herself. The distraught goat tried to climb the pen to get to Jensen. As Sebastian hovered over the fire, Jensen tied a rope around Betty's neck. The goat was as thankful to be going as a goat could be. They would give Betty a chance to return the favor. When they had gotten away and found at least simple shelter, they would not be able to build a fire on such a wet night. If they could find a dry hole, a spot under a rock ledge, or beneath fallen trees, they would hunker down beside the goat. Betty would keep them both warm, so they wouldn't freeze to death. Jensen understood the plaintive calls Betty made toward the house. The goat's ears were at attention. Betty was worried for the woman who wasn't going. Jensen collected all the carrots and acorns off the shelf, stuffing them in pockets and packs. When Sebastian was as dry as he was going to allow himself to get, they donned their wool cloaks and topped them with the sheepskin. With Jensen leading Betty by the rope, they started out into the drenching darkness. Sebastian headed for the trail, down from the front, the way he had come in. Jensen seized his arm, stopping him. "They might be waiting down there, but we have to get out of here. I have a better way. We made an escape route." He gazed at her a moment through the fall of icy rain separating them. Then, without further protest, followed her into the unknown. Chapter 7 Oba Shalk snatched the chicken by the neck and lifted it from the nest box. The chicken's head looked tiny above his meaty fist. With his other hand, he fished a warm brown egg from the bottom of the depression in the straw. He gently placed the egg in the basket with the others. Oba didn't set the chicken back down. He grinned as he lifted it closer to his face, watching its head twist from side to side, its beak open and close, open and close. He put his own lips close, so the beak was touching his lips. Then, with all his might, he blew into the chicken's open mouth. The chicken squawked and flapped, madly trying to escape the vice-like fist. A deep laugh rolled up from Oba's throat.
"Oba? Oba, where are you?"
When he heard his mother hollering for him, Oba plopped the chicken back on its nest. His mother's voice had come from the nearby barn. Squawking its terror, the chicken fled the henhouse. Oba followed it out of the coop and then trotted toward the door to the barn. The week before, they had had a rare winter downpour. By the following day, the standing water had frozen and the rain had turned to snow. Wind-swept snow now hid the ice, making for a treacherous footing. Despite his size, Oba negotiated the icy conditions without much difficulty. Oba prided himself on being light on his feet. It was important for a person not to let their body or mind become slow and dull. Oba believed it was important to learn new things. He believed it was important to grow. He thought it was important for a person to use what they had learned. That was how people grew. The barn and house were one small structure made of wattle and daub, woven branches covered with a mixture of clay, straw, and dung. Inside, the house and barn were separated by a stone wall. After he'd built the house, Oba had made the wall inside by stacking flat gray rocks from the field. He had learned the technique from observing a neighbor stack rocks at the side of his field. The wall was a luxury most homes didn't have. Hearing his mother yell his name again, he tried to think of what he could have done wrong. As he perused his mental list of the chores she'd told him to do, he couldn't recall one in the barn that he'd failed to do. Oba wasn't forgetful, and besides, they were chores he did often. There shouldn't be anything in the barn to have set her off. True as all that was, none of it shielded him from incurring his mother's ire. She could think of things that needed doing that had never before needed doing.
Oba? Oba? How many times do I need to call for you?
In his mind's eye, he could see her mean little mouth all pinched up as she said his name, expecting him to appear the instant she screeched for him. The woman had a voice that could unwind good rope. Oba turned sideways to fit his shoulders through the small side door into the barn. Rats squeaked and scurried away at his feet. The barn, with a hayloft above, housed their milk cow, two hogs, and two oxen. The cow was still in the barn. The hogs had been turned loose in the oak stand to rut for acorns under the snow. Oba could see the hind ends of both oxen through the larger barn door out to the yard on the other side. His mother stood on the low hill of frozen muck, hands on her hips, the cold smoke of her breath rising from her nostrils like a dragon's fiery snort. Mother was a big-boned woman, broad in the shoulders and hips, broad everywhere. Even her forehead was broad. He had heard people say that when his mother was younger, she had been a handsome woman, and indeed, when he had been a boy, she had had a number of suitors. Year by year, though, the struggles of life had worn away her looks, leaving behind deeply etched lines and sagging folds of flesh. The suitors had long ago stopped coming around. Oba made his way across the black, icy ground inside the barn and stood before her, hands in his pockets. She walloped the side of his shoulder with a stout stick. Oba! He flinched when she whacked him three times more, each swat punctuating his name. Oba! 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 When he had been young, such a thrashing would have left him black and blue. He was too big and strong now for her stick to hurt him. That made her angry, too. While he wasn't bothered much by the stick now that he was grown, the condemnation in her voice whenever she spoke his name still made his ears burn. She reminded him of a spider with a mean little mouth, a black widow spider. He hunched, trying not to look so big.
What is it, Mama? Where are you loafing when your mother calls?
Her face screwed up, a plum long ago turned to a prune.
Oh, by the ox! Oh, by the dimwit! Oh, by the oaf! Where were you?
Oba lifted his arm defensively as she cracked him with a stick again.
I was getting the eggs, Mama, getting the eggs. Look at this mess. Don't it ever occur to you to do anything around here unless someone with brains tells you to?
Oba looked around, but didn't see what needed doing, other than the regular work, that would have set her off so. There was always work to do. Rats stuck their noses out from under boards in the stalls, whiskers twitching as they sniffed, watching with beady black eyes, listening with little rat ears. He looked back at his mother, but had no answer. None would suit her anyway. She pointed at the ground.
Look at this place. Don't you ever think to scoop out the muck? Soon as it thaws, it'll be running under the wall and into the house where I sleep. Do you think I feed you for nothing? Don't you think you have to earn your keep, you lazy oaf? Oba the oaf.
She had already used the last invective. Oba was surprised sometimes that she wasn't more creative, didn't learn new things. When he had been little, she had seemed to him a mind reader of inscrutable ability, with a talented tongue that could cut him with knowing lashes. Now that he was grown so much larger than her, he sometimes wondered if other aspects of his mother were less formidable than he had once feared, wondered if her power over him wasn't somehow artificial, an illusion, a scarecrow with a mean little mouth. Yet she still had a way about her that could cut him down to nothing. And she was his mother. A person was supposed to mind their mother. That was the most important thing a person could do. She had taught him that lesson well. Oba didn't think he could do much more to earn his keep. He worked from sunup to sundown. He prided himself on not being lazy. Oba was a man of action. He was strong and worked as hard as any two men. He could best any man he knew. Men didn't give him any trouble. Women, though, stymied him. He never knew what to do around women. Big as he was, women had a way of making him feel puny. He scuffed his boot against the dark, rippled, slick mound underfoot, assessing the rock-hard mass. The animals added to it continually, much of it freezing before it could all be scooped out, allowing it to build in layers throughout the long, cold winter. Periodically, Oba scattered straw over the top for better footing. He'd not want his mother to slip and fall. It wasn't long, though, before the layer of straw became slicked over, and it was time for another.
"But, Mama, the ground's all frozen!"
In the past, he had always scooped it out as it thawed and could be worked. In the spring, when it got warmer and the flies filled the barn with their constant buzzing, it would come off in layers where the straw was, but not now. Now, it was welded together into a solid mass.
"Always an excuse, isn't that right, Oba? Always an excuse for your mother, you worthless bastard boy."
She folded her arms, glowering at him. He couldn't hide from the truth, couldn't pretend, and she knew it. Oba peered around in the dark barn and saw the heavy steel scoop shovel leaning against the wall.
"I'll scoop it, Mama. You go back to your spinning, and I'll scoop the barn good."
He didn't exactly know how he was going to scoop the solid frozen muck, only that he had to.
"Get started now," she huffed. "Use what light is left of the day. When it gets dark, then I want you to go to town to get me some medicine from Lethea."
Now he knew why she had come to the barn, looking for him.
"My knees is aching me again," she complained, as if she wanted to cut off any objection he might voice, even though he never did.
He thought it, though. She always seemed to know what he was thinking.
"Today you can get started in the barn, and tomorrow you can go back to scraping the muck all the way down until you clean it all out. Before the day wears on, though, I want you to go get my medicine."
Oba pulled on his ear as he cast his gaze toward the ground. He didn't like going to see Lethea, the woman with the cures. He didn't like her. She always looked at him like he was a worm. She was mean as rake, worse. She was a sorceress. If Lethea didn't like someone, they suffered for it. Everybody was afraid of Lethea, so Oba didn't feel so singled out. Still, though, he didn't like going to see her.
"I will, Mama. I'll fetch your medicine. And don't you worry, I'll get to work at scraping the muck out, just like you said." "I have to tell you every little thing, don't I, Oba?"
Her glare burned into him.
"I don't know why I bothered raising such a worthless bastard boy," she added under her breath. "Should have done what Lethea told me in the beginning."
Oba heard her say this often, when she was feeling sorry for herself, sorry that no suitors came around anymore, sorry that none had wanted to marry her. Oba was a curse she bore with bitter regret, a bastard child who'd brought her trouble from the first. If not for Oba, maybe she would have gotten herself a husband to provide for her.
"And don't you be staying in town with any foolishness."
"I won't, Mama. I'm sorry that your knees are bad today." She whacked him with a stick.
"They wouldn't be so bad if I didn't have to follow around a big dumb ox saying that he does what he should already be doing."
"Yes, Mama."
"Did you get the eggs?"
"Yes, Mama." She eyed him suspiciously, then pulled a coin from her flaxen apron.
"Tell Lethea to make up a remedy for you too, along with my medicine. Maybe we can yet rid you of the keeper's evil. We could get the evil out of you. Maybe you wouldn't be so worthless."
His mother, from time to time, sought to purge him of what she believed to be his evil nature. She tried all sorts of potions. When he was little, she had often forced him to drink burning powder she mixed with soapy water. Then she would lock him in a pen in the barn, hoping the otherworldly evil wouldn't like being burned and locked up both, and would flee his restrained earthly body. His pen didn't have slats, like the pens for the animals did. It was made of solid boards. In the summer, it was an oven. When she made him take burning powder and then dragged him by the arm and locked him in the pen, he near to died of terror that she'd never let him out or never let him have a drink of water. He welcomed the beating she would give him to try to silence his screams just to be let out. "You buy my medicine from Lathea and a remedy for you." His mother held up the small silver coin as her eyes narrowed into a spiteful squint. "And don't you go wasting any of this on women." Oba felt his ears heating. Each time his mother sent him to buy something, whether medicine or leatherwork or pottery or supplies, she always admonished him not to waste the money on women. He knew that when she told him not to waste it on women, she was mocking him. Oba didn't have the courage to say much of anything to women. He always bought what his mother said to buy. He never once wasted it on anything. He feared his mother's wrath. He hated that she always told him not to waste the money when he never did. It made him feel like she thought he was intending to do wrong, even though he wasn't. It made him guilty, even though he had done no wrong. It made what was in his thoughts, even if he didn't have them, a crime. He tugged on a burning ear. "I won't waste it, Mama. And dress respectable, not like some dumb ox you already reflect badly enough on me." "I will, Mama. You'll see." Oba ran around to the house and fetched his felt cap and brown woolen jacket for his journey to Gretton, a couple miles northwest. She watched him carefully hang them on a peg, where they would stay clean until he was ready to go to town. With the scoop shovel, he started in on the rock-hard muck. The steel shovel rang like a bell each time he rammed it at the frozen ground. He grunted with each mighty blow. Chips of black ice burst forth, splattering his trousers. Each was but an infinitesimal speck from the dark mountain of muck. It was going to take a long time and a lot of work. He didn't mind hard work, though. Time he had in abundance. Mother watched from the doorway of the barn for a few minutes to make sure he was working up a sweat as he chipped away at the frozen mound. When she was satisfied, she vanished from the doorway to go back to her own work, leaving him to think about his coming visit to Lathea. "Oba." Oba paused. The rats, back in the small places, stilled. Their little black rat eyes watched him watching them. The rats went back to their search for food. Oba listened for the familiar voice. He heard the door to the house close. Mother, a spinster, was going back to spinning her wool. Mr. Tukman brought her wool, which she spun into thread for him to use on his loom. The meager pay helped support her and her bastard son. "Oba." Oba knew the voice well. He'd heard it ever since he could remember. He never told his mother about it. She would be angry and think that it was the keeper's evil calling to him. She would want to force him to swallow even more potions and cures. He was too big to be locked in the pen anymore, but he wasn't too big to drink Lathea's cures. When one of the fat rats scurried past, Oba stepped on its tail, trapping it. "Oba." The rat squeaked a little rat squeak. Little rat legs scrambled, trying to get away. Little rat claws scratched against the black ice. Oba reached down and seized the fat, furry body. He peered at the whiskered face. The head twisted futilely. Beady black eyes watched him. Those eyes were filled with fear. "Surrender." Oba thought it was vitally important to learn new things. Quick as a fox, he bit off the rat's head. Chapter 8. From what seemed to her the least troublesome corner of the room, Jensen kept an eye on the door as well as the boisterous crowd. Half a room away, Sebastian leaned on the thick wooden plank counter, speaking to the innkeeper. She was a big woman, and within a forbidding scowl that made her look like she was as used to trouble as she was prepared to deal with it.